Today is, what is today? May 11th, 2012. This is the third and probably final interview with Coach Les Richardson. We're here at his home in Madison. And with me is, my name is Troy Reeves, and with me is Greg Bond, and we're both with the UW-Madison Archives. Coach, we have, we don't have a lot of questions about your coaching at UW anymore. We're going to move on to your time in administration. But are there things about your time coaching that you'd like to tell us or talk to about before we move on to that?
Please, for the record, Lucius Blair, one of the most outstanding linebackers in the state of Texas, came up here in midterm because Daryl Teddick is the one I told you about before that also resigned after they hired so many Hard Rock people. Recruited him. And he had a lot of offers. But anyway, they recruited him and brought him up for the summer school, or midterm, sorry. And he took some courses to get in touch with the acceptable to regularly enroll in September. Anyway, he went back home after midsection, back to Texas. And he now coming fall practice, and this is after Milt Broome, because he was a freshman, and he played on the freshman team. That was before they abolished that freshman could be eligible to play the first year. So he was late getting back for the fall practice, the second year under the new coaching regime. And the coaches voted 4-1 because he missed coming in when they said come in. He didn't miss any practice time or any pertinent time, I put it that way, from Texas. He missed his connection from Madison. He got to Chicago, but back in those days they only had one flight coming, and he was late getting in to Dallas, to Chicago. So he missed his flight. So he had to hitchhike. He hitchhiked that night, all night, and he got there to Madison. And didn't know where to go. And at that time, at the gym, at the field house, where we suit up and practice and everything, people go in and out of there all the time for exercise and different things. And so he waited at the door where somebody would come out, and then he could go in the field house where we were supposed to meet the next day. Slept on that concrete stairwell where we were all supposed to come the next day in order to be there on the regular scheduled time for practice. And because he didn't show up, the coaches had taken a vote because he wasn't there at that first meeting to dismiss him from the team. That was terrible. And here I am going to be recruiting in Texas. And faraway places, we were supposed to be recruiting all over now. And this is that's the bitter pill I had to swallow. And so they told him that next day when he showed up, the coaches had voted to renege on his scholarship. That was the toughest thing I had to swallow. Anyway. And he would come to my office because he needs some help. And Milt Broome helped him get into Tulsa because he had a friend at Tulsa. Because Milt Broome was the one that really recruited him. And outstanding linebacker. And here we are looking for good players because we kicked them off the team. In my coaching days, I don't kick good football players off the team. I find another means of punishment, run the stadium steps, run laps, do push-ups. You don't kick good football players off the team. You find some other means of punishing them, you know what I mean? And they did that with other players later on, I found out. And this house that I bought, I want to put this on the record. The Texas players and far away players, St. Louis further, couldn't go home for holidays, like Thanksgiving holidays, spring break, and that type of thing. Well, of course, the Wisconsin people, they go to Florida and get a suntan. But these Texas players, they didn't have the resources to go home. So spring break, not only and Thanksgiving, with Thanksgiving, we would even cook a turkey for them. A fellow named Jack Hewitt from Neenah, Wisconsin, had his in the flyers down here and bring a turkey. I mean a big turkey, so big, do we have to take everything out to go and leave one? What's it called, them things?
Great,
yeah, could only leave one because the turkey's so big. Anyway, and we invited all those players out here. And my wife there up all night cooking that turkey with all the trimmings. We did that for the Thanksgiving. And I used to have a pool table right here and a ping pong table. We didn't have as much fun in here then as we have now. But I had a ping pong and we would bring those out on spring break, bring them out so they have somewhere to go. Because sometimes they close the dormitories, you know. And that was part of my responsibility because I felt obligated after bringing them boys up here. I met the parents and everything. And I want to put that on the record. Another disappointing experience, we talked about the snow and and enlightenment we have. My wife was working at UW Extension, and I got a call from one of the students, I think it's one of the players, and said, "Coach, your wife has slipped on the ice on the snow, and she needs some help." And so I was in a staff meeting, but the secretary told me it's urgent. And so I came back, I said, I got to go. So I put on my coat and boots and all that stuff. And of course, one of the coaches said, "Where are you going? We're in the middle of a meeting." I said, "I got to go." Anyway, that look I gave him, I believe to this day, if he had said another word, that would have been a blood battle, and all that blood would not have been mine, I guarantee you. Here's my wife, and so I got there, and she was lying down, and there was people attending her. So we helped to get her in the car, and we went right directly to the doctor. And come to find out, she had broken her ankle. So when I got back to the office, the next day, of course, the word had gotten out that she slipped and fell and broke her ankle. I got a call that says, "This Coach Richard?" "Yes, it is." "Who said your wife slipped? You think she might have been pushed?" That really upset me. Upset me to, I can't describe it. Because somebody intentionally either bumped into her or pushed her until she fell. and broke her ankle. Now I'm ready for your questions.
Okay. I think we want to start with your thoughts on a couple of the athletic directors, and then we're going to talk about your transition from coaching to Bascom Hill.
I guess when you first got here, Ivy Williamson was athletic director. He had contacted you when you were in Texas. So just any thoughts, memories, impressions of Ivy Williamson?
I know when they fired Milt Broom, of course, and the newspapers and everybody was saying, no, the alumni, oh, we got a new young coach now. He can relate to the players. Ivy, what do you think about that? We had what's called a Bedota club like that. He said, not a damn bit. He said, what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? He said, not a damn thing. Because you know Ivy, he speaks his mind. And sure enough, not a damn thing happened. Well, something did happen, but it was all bad. And what's the rest of the question?
Just if you had any memories, stories, thoughts about Ivy Williamson.
Ivy Williamson and his wife and Milt, I guess I keep going back to those days because those were the most pleasant things I could talk about. Invite me out to their house more than once. And not only me, but my wife also, Milt and Helen Broom and Ivy. I forgot his wife's name. Helen, too. Anyway, they would invite me out. And one time, I went out to Milt, Ivy Williamson's house, and to have a guy that runs a store here named Smith. They saw the overcoat I had on, it had no lining and nothing. Oh, man, you can't survive in Wisconsin with no coat like that. And the next day, sure enough, Ivy Williamson brought the coat to work. Said, let's stop by the office before you go home. And there it was. Oh, tell you the truth, I still got that coat. It was really, it was more like, I don't know if you could tell what kind of coat Jim Brown had on. It had this fur around it at the top and everything. I said, oh, this is a Jim Brown coat. And I really appreciated that. And when one of our players had his leg broke, Melvin Walker, in Minnesota game. And I kept in touch with him. And when I came home, we all got on the plane, came home, but he was there by himself. I thought maybe they would have left a trainer or somebody with him. Yeah. So I decided, I said, look, I don't want that boy to wake up in the morning from out of that, and after they have amputated his leg. That's what happened. They finally had to amputate his leg from just because, well, it was broken, and I think the blood clots or something sitting in the way, in order to save his life. So I called his mother, and she came to Minnesota, but I went to Milt and Ivy. Now Milt is assistant athletic director now, because he had tenure. And I told him the situation. And they said, well, Les, I tell you what, you get on that airplane the first thing in the morning so you can be there when he wakes up. And they provided the transportation and the hotel lodging for me to go back so Mel Walker would have somebody that he was familiar with. Mm-hmm. Sitting by his bedside, because his mother, it would take her a long time to get there. And so, that's what I remember about it. And as I said before, but Milt carried me to every, coach would have something before. Sometimes if the team would stay overnight, they'd have a gathering. And Milt carried me to every one of those. But that was the last time I went, though. I didn't go to any more when Milt wasn't here.
Then in, I think, 1969, Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch became the AD, I guess, for your maybe the end of your time in the athletic department. Do you have any memories, thoughts, stories, impressions about him?
All I remember, he was a nice handshaking guy. Had a nice smile. But the way Milt found out that he was no longer going to be the assistant athletic director, when the Elroy Hirsch, this stands out in my mind, went to Hawaii on vacation, the secretary told Milt that he was no longer the assistant athletic director. No, she gave him the letter from Elroy. I thought that was kind of for a man that carried him to the Rose Bowl and so forth. I thought that was kind of a cheap shot. And of course, Elroy, when he came, and brought in John Jardine from the UCLA staff, he told John Jardine, I don't know how I found this out, that he didn't have to keep me. Although I had tenure and so forth, but anyway. And, but at that time, though, he didn't have to tell me he didn't want to keep me. I had enough of that. And incidentally, though, you know what? I think I'm the longest tenured black coach that came here. You check your records. You're just a research man. Because the next coach stayed 2 years. Bob Lee, I recommended him. And he said, I just can't stand it. I can't take that no more. I just can't take it no more. And so he left and went to an all-black school. And the next one was a high school coach, John Jardine. From Racine, he's a retired attorney now. He stayed 2 years. Because some things changed, but it didn't really change for people of color like myself. Anyway, and the next one came under Dave McLean. He was one of Dave McLean's top guys. Dave McLean brought him here with him. Mm-hmm. And things got somewhat difficult. And he was the first, Dave McLean was the first one that fired him. And he just thought the world of Dave McLean. He said, I never thought Coach McLean would have done that to me. But what that coach was doing was what I refused to do. I wasn't going to be no whipping boy for the black players to satisfy the other coaches. But he was. He would get on them. He would get on them. But I refused to do that anyway. It came back to haunt him too. Okay, I guess that's it.
So then, after the new coach comes in 69, you move to administration. Interested to hear you talk about that transition, how it came up, you got this position, what actually your title was. I haven't been able to track down what your title was when you moved to Bascom Hill.
Well, I first went to extension.
Okay.
Because Bascom was paying my salary. Mm-hmm. And so I was a freebie for extension. And a fellow named Curtis Gear, who worked in extension, knew about this situation. And at that time, all of the schools that were getting a certain percentage of federal aid, mm-hmm. and of course extension gets maybe over 75-80% of that budget is federal funds, because they're the outreach of the university, you know, mm-hmm. that go out to them. Help the farmers and
sure.
things like that. Okay. So he knew about it, and he's a good friend of mine. The two chancellors said, okay, because I was getting frustrated. If you used to go into work doing something, being active, and then I stay at home all day, my place was a meeting place for the old fired coaches. Whenever that doorbell rang, I thought, oh, here they are.
And so then what did you do at Extension?
I was, at that time, everybody had to have a person identified to employ minorities, and they called it at that time affirmative action. Mm-hmm. And those who received a certain X number of dollars from the federal government had to have that. That was mandatory. Mm-hmm. So here I was, sociology major, and the economics fit right in. Of course, coaching was incidental to me at that time. Anyway, that's how I got the job in Extension. And then the Madison campus finally said, hey, we paying this man's salary. We have to have an affirmative action officer because most of our grants and so forth come from the federal government. So they decided to bring me up to basketball, and that's how I happened to get into basketball. And I never shall forget to thank Ed Young, because at the time President Harrington had retired. And I asked him one day, I used to visit him all the time when he was, after he retired. I said, what made you decide to honor that President Harrington's deal with me? He said, because it was the right thing to do. He said, well, sometimes you have to do what's right. And you do it because it's the right thing to do. And I remember that very distinctly, because I don't know what I would have done had he not. But then I got to be pretty good at it. I won't say begging, but coaching people why they should have an integrated staff. And not only good for our program, but it was good for their program too. And at that time too, we had what we call a 5-year program. We were trying to recruit Ms. Dahl, remember Ms. Ruth Dahl? It's probably 4 years to come.
Sure, yeah.
She was head of that program. And we were trying to bring in minority students because our campus was lily white, yeah. So that tied in with me encouraging them departments to employ minorities. And of course, as you know, there's three different levels. It's called academic staff.
Classified staff.
Classified staff is more or less secretarial and mm-hmm. people like that. They don't necessarily have to have degrees, but they have to have some skills. But academic staff, most of them have degrees of some sort, not mandatory that they have PhDs. And then, of course, the professors and mm-hmm. and deans and directors, that's another level. And so that was my job, to go and talk with all of those different areas, the heads of them, to try to influence them why they should have an integrated staff. Mm-hmm. It wasn't too difficult, but it wasn't readily acceptable either. Mm-hmm. But it still wasn't as bad as where I left from.
Coach, do you have any specific memories of the coaxing you did to those departments that turned out possibly, you know, people that they hired that you remember?
By the way, my title was assistant to the chancellor because it carries a little bit more weight. With the department heads. Of course, it didn't matter with some of us. especially University Hospital, was my most difficult client. But the departments, each one of them said, well, it's difficult for us to find, quote unquote, qualified, you've heard this before, minorities. So Chancellor Young had hired one of the professors, because professors could relate to professors. Mm-hmm. And he pointed her the head of the affirmative action office, Professor Serena Pundra. Mm-hmm. And so she went to the chancellor on my suggestion. I said, the nurses say they can't find qualified nurses. I said, they got all kind of qualified nurses in North Carolina and Tuskegee. He said, why don't we send a team down there to do it? And of course, we had a classified person named Hall Smith from the personnel office, and we had a nurse from the nursing school who happened to be a black young lady. And then we had the head of a hiring from the nursing school, Carol, I've forgotten her last name. And was that four or five? Went to those schools down south. I think it took about 2 weeks to do it. And Chancellor picked up the tab. And then I think Professor Serena Pundrum encouraged some of the department heads too, because we were recruiting for you.
Sure.
To throw in some money. And so those deans, as I said, relate to Professor Pundrum, and they kicked in some money too. And so that's who sponsored the trip. And we were able to, I would say it was a successful trip, but some of the ones we wanted to recruit, we brought them up here for visits even. And most of the ones we brought up for visits stayed, but the others, somehow they heard about this Wisconsin weather before. Like I didn't know about it, they did. And they were reluctant to come, it was just too far away from home. But otherwise, I would say, when the inspectors came down from the from Washington, first they gave us a thumbs down. But after a couple of years, they gave us a thumb up because we had improved with our hiring practices to that extent. And don't think they didn't check, because you had to qualify in order to continue to get that federal money. And that was a big emphasis. We had to put on these deans and directors and people with hiring authority. We're not here just playing. We're here because it's a financial matter for the university. And of course, you have some good and some bad and some in between. Some are reluctant, even after you find them qualified people. But you know, I found it really, you either overqualified or you're underqualified. And you don't have the advanced degree. And I can name you at least five people, that got the advanced degree, which was the terminal degree, the PhD, and they still didn't hire them. I hope you're trying to look for a job somewhere else, because they claim they don't hire their own. We want them to go off somewhere else and get experience I just grew up, write a few books or something. And everybody else wants you, now they'll bring you back. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that was the rationale for not hiring their own. Kwame Salter, John Smith. I have a daughter-in-law right here now. She got her PhD from the University of Wisconsin. And it's difficult for her to get a J-O-B. But anyway.
Do you remember any other programs that were successful? It sounds like this nursing program was at least relatively successful. Do you remember any other programs working with departments like that that you had some success with?
I only had success with the hiring authorities after our whole affirmative action office, because we were told you got to go and sell your program, go and sell your program. So we organized our affirmative action office of a team, and we would go to different departments and try to influence them. At least we would meet with the hiring authorities of every department on the campus. And that took us two years to do that, I believe. There's a lot of departments on this campus. Yes. Whoa. And it became somewhat more successful after we had met with them. But you still had your obstacle. I don't remember any that really come to my mind now. Okay. But we did bring in an assistant vice president, but he was a president of a predominantly black college before we came here. Mm-hmm. So I don't guess he was overqualified, but they did decide to bring him in. And he was in the chancellor's office.
I guess maybe one more question about this. You mentioned the hospital was resistant to the work you were doing. Were there other units on campus that you felt were resisting or not trying to comply with the affirmative action mandates?
No, they were smarter than that. They didn't put up any resistance at all. They didn't have nobody. Mm. That's...
Coach, I wonder if you could talk about, or if you've thought about how your skills in coaching, if they related to this new job.
Well, I knew how to get along with people. And as I see it, my master's is in guidance and counseling. And those skills enabled me to relate to people who had hiring authority. And I attribute that to how I was able to be somewhat successful in that job.
Just to get on the record, what year did you move to Bascom from Extension? Do you remember? Early 70s, I think, sometime.
You know, I can't.
We can also look it up back at the office to get it on, get the exact year.
Yeah, okay. It was around 75 or somewhere.
Okay. Another incident that, or another event that happened in the early 70s was the founding of the AFRAM department after the black student strike and a lot of student activism from the African American students. Were you involved with that at all, AFRAM department? Was that, were you aware of that was going on? Did you help out? Did you, or do you have any thoughts on those types of events that happened?
What's it called? African American?
It's Afro American Studies.
Yeah. I played a role in that. And I worked with the chairman in hiring, in the hiring of qualified staff. And of course, I had to emphasize that, remember, we can't just hire all black folk in here, because I'm emphasizing to the rest of the campus, you got to hire some black folk. And so it's got to be somewhat of an integrated balance. But if you remember, once or twice they had a chairman of African American status was white, and one was Hispanic. But I had no trouble hiring and recommending professors for that department.
Mm-hmm. I guess speaking of the early 70s, one of the questions that we always ask people who were in Madison around that time, the bombing of Sterling Hall, of course, was a very noteworthy, well-known event. You were in Madison. Were you in Madison in August 8, 1970? Do you have any memories of the Sterling Hall bombing you'd like to share?
The one other related earlier about our football players going down there and start, I guess they were just going in there looking like everybody else was. And this was one of the young men I told you about from the Afro-American Studies Department that decked one of our star football players. Once they related that to the strike that the football players were supposed to engage in. I don't know how that related, but that was attached somehow. You know, that was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I can't think of it right now.
Okay. I guess any other memories of your time in Bascom? You worked there until the late 80s, I believe. Any other thoughts, memories of your time as administrator here at UW?
Well, it was difficult to break the old buddy system. You know what the buddy system is? I know somebody who knows somebody.
Yep.
And of course, most of the people who know somebody are the same people as they are. And that was one of the difficult tasks that the Affirmative Action Office had in trying to, by the way, they don't call it Affirmative Action anymore, they call it Office of Diversity. More sophisticated. Shoot, I don't know what that means either. But that was the hardest thing to do. Because the professor would tell you, I don't know any African Americans. They didn't run in that circle. And so that probably was the biggest one. The old buddy system. The break.
So you retired about, I think we said last time, 1987, 88. Do you remember about when you retired?
Let me see.
This one?
Underneath that. No, it wasn't after that. Must have been 88, 89. Because I remember my mother got sick. And she passed in 90. And I took a leave of absence to go and stay with her. And when I got back, they had changed the Affirmative Action Office around again. And by the way, I went through three directors of the Affirmative Action Office. And I tell you the truth, I'm the one who trained them and they made them directors anyway. I didn't want to be tied down to no directorship anyway. In fact, I retired right after that. I came back from my mother, and I retired right after that.
Curious what you've been doing, what you did after you retired. Any, like, what kept your life active? Did you have any interests, hobbies? What kind of things were you doing after
you retired? I played a lot of golf.
Did you improve since you played with Jim Brown?
Well, because coaches weren't taking up so much of my time. So I got better, but not consistent. I might par one hole and shoot a 5-under 3 par the next hole. Then I might par another hole, and then I might birdie another hole. But then I might make a 8 on the next one. So I couldn't, my total score wasn't that.
Sure.
But it was in the 40s for 9 holes. 41, 42. I probably averaged about 42 or 9. And that gives you what, something in the 80s for 18, yeah.
You've been inducted into a couple of Sports Hall of Fames in Texas. I think the Texas Sports Hall of Champions and the Waco Independent School District Hall of Fame. Interested to hear you talk about that. That's get this recognition several decades after you were coaching in Texas. What did that mean to you? Do you have any memories of those events, those induction ceremonies?
Those were the most pleasant years of my retirement. Going back to Texas and being considered for these kind of awards is most rewarding. I don't know if they made me feel guilty for leaving, but they still remembered the good old days. Mm-hmm. And I still have players there who keep those things like that on their mind. And every once in a while, something come out in the newspaper and say, well, the Waco High, that was the other school at that time. Player did this, did that. And then somebody will remember something that one of our players did too, and they'll challenge the newspaper on it. And of course, the newspapers have changed now too. And they'll print it, they'll write it, yeah. And you wouldn't believe the accolades we get. And sometimes they get the Hall of Champions. It is housed in the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. The displays are in the same building. And I still contribute to that building because of the upkeep, they're always soliciting money like everybody else. But to go back and see some of the old players and the memories, pleasant memories. It's heartwarming, it really is. It's worth the, I guess, the experience I encountered up here to go back to a pleased and pleasant mm-hmm. environment, yeah.
I'm just curious, you've lived in Madison now for about 40 years. Any thoughts on living in Madison, what it's like to live, or your any thoughts, stories, experience of living in Madison since the 1960s as a city?
I met some of the most wonderful people outside of the area of football that you ever want to encounter. Nice, hospitable, and just downright treat people like people are supposed to be treated. I have no qualms to quarrel with Madison other than high taxes. Taxes keep going up and up and up.
So you recently celebrated your 60th wedding anniversary. I think my 12th wedding anniversary is coming up.
Do you have a way to go?
Yeah. Any advice for me and for future generations about how to have a long marriage?
Yes. Do everything your wife tells you to do, and don't forget it, because she's not gonna forget it. Because I don't do it all the time either. But she reminds me of it. By the way, do you remember, I don't know if I said this or not, but when I came up here, I had two cars, and my wife would have a car to drive to Extension to work, or carry out her response, whatever she was doing. And I would pick up the coaches. We have to be there at 6 o'clock in the morning. Can you imagine? And I would pick up two coaches, Roger French and Gene Felker. And of course, I'd have to stay until they get ready to go home to in order to. So it was because we were riding together. And I don't know. That kind of created some tension. I couldn't help it because that was the car they gave me. I remember I told you they gave me a car. That's how I happened to have two cars. Yeah, I bought those two cars.
Do you have anything else?
I don't think so.
So the last couple of questions are allowing you to, if there's anything on your mind that you want to get on the record before we close up shop.
Well, I'll be eternally grateful for you two guys for coming out and putting this on the record. I'll be eternally grateful for Ed Young and President Harrington. And Extension, because although somebody else was paying my salary, they gave me a job, something to do. And I want to put on the record that all of the coaches, assistant coaches, wasn't as painful to endure as maybe two or three. I won't call any names because I don't want to get sued. But they all were not. And Coach Van Dyke stands out in my mind. He was a freshman coach. And that same Lucius Blair, who we kicked off our varsity football team, he stayed in touch with me. He called me, he stayed in touch. In fact, he wrote me a letter. And every one time he said, give Coach Van Dyke a hello for me. Oh, Coach Van Dyke was, he was like a father figure to those players.
I guess one question I'm always interested in, you've been playing sports, coaching sports for many, many years. Do you still follow sports? Do you have any opinions on what's going on these days in college sports, professional sports? Any words of wisdom about athletics?
Well, I dislike the rumor that they're paying players to hurt other players.
Well, sure.
They get hurt often enough without you paying them to hurt somebody. But sometimes sports, you remember this player, that kicked a player in the head when he was down? This is a rumor that's going on. And the coaches and officials and everybody asked, why did you do that? He said, my mama told me not to ever let anybody take my money. And that man was taking money out of my pocket. Because every time he'd run the ball, he'd run 15 to 20 yards and make touchdowns. All right, I thought that was hilarious.
All right, I think if you have any closing statements, anything wrapping up, I think we've pretty much covered our questions, covered your career, I think, pretty well over three interviews. Anything last to add that you feel we've left out?
I'll probably think of something as soon as you walk out to the door.
That's usually how it works.
Yeah, but right now.
All right, well, Coach Richardson, thank you for your time, and this concludes the third interview and probably the oral history with Coach Les Richardson. Thank you.
Thank you, General.